Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 326. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me, as you would expect, on a beautiful Las Vegas Thursday afternoon. The clouds are in the sky, and normally you wouldn't say that.
Partially beautiful.
Normally you wouldn't say a cloudy, rainy day is beautiful, but when it's 115 degrees outside, sir,
I will take
a little bit of cloud cover and a little bit of rain.
I was going to say, I don't think it's 115 anymore. It did cool down. 96 right now.
96 and rainy.
Which feels, you know, without having the humidity here, that is one of the things that you could, like, I rolled my window down because it was much cooler, but you could sort of smell, like.
You could smell it.
You could smell it in the air.
It's bizarre. When you move out here to the desert, all of a sudden, I feel like I'm in the Wild West, like tracking rain on the. I mean, you can smell it like miles away. That is one of the oddest things. Not that you. I mean, everybody knows what rain smells like, but when you're in the desert and you only get to smell it like twice a year, you suddenly can track it off in the distance.
Remember that last year? Where did we go last year? Like 160 days or something like that without rain.
Crazy.
Without measurable.
Even though there
was a couple
rain.
Days where there were like little sprinkles. Yeah, little sprinkles, and it just didn't measure. I was like, all right, now y'all just trying to pad your numbers. I was like, bro, that was rain. Come on now.
Sir, we couldn't measure it.
Couldn't measure it. Somebody accidentally poured out the water. Couldn't measure it.
Spilled there. Couldn't be measured. Didn't count. You know. It is a beautiful Thursday afternoon. Even if it is a little bit rainy. It's a day off for both of us, so we're doing what you do. You start day drinking. You come to Buffalo Wild Wings at Warm Springs in Durango. When you have a day off in the middle of the week, you know what you do. You start day drinking, and that's exactly what we do. But I do want to say, it is a little bit practical to do some day drinking today because I have to work at 5 a.m. tomorrow morning. So you start the day a little bit early, you can finish a little bit early. You know what I'm saying? And, I mean, we can't just be sitting around the Casa de Cold Coffee, as beautiful as it is,
as amazing
as the estate and the palatial grounds really are.
It's not the same when it's raining, you know.
No, but I'm just saying, we got to get out and we got to celebrate, man. I believe it's your 35th birthday this week, right? And so, I mean, that's a big one for you.
Just barely turned 35, yeah. It's pretty great. I was going to say, you're talking about day drinking. I was like, I think I stopped drinking at like 1 or 2 this morning.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You went hard on the birthday.
Well, that's the thing. It was like, it wasn't like pound, you know, the beers. It was drinking, but then it was like hanging out with some of the buddies. So it was just like, by the end of the night, when you drink so much that you don't feel like buzzed, but it's like, I know I've been drinking.
But I can relate to that 100%.
Well, at some point, I was like, I think I've been drinking for 6 or 7 hours.
You basically drink yourself back sober again?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, also, too, I ate about 15 pounds of meat yesterday at the Texas Day, a Brazilian steakhouse called Gaucho or something in the Fashion Show Mall. A new one that I've never been to. Evie, the Brazilian reporter, is the one that turned me onto that one. She said, oh, there's this one down there. Has like 17 meats, has like the chicken hearts and all the other meats that you don't see at a lot of the other ones. I was like, okay, you're winning me over here. You're winning me over. And you know me. I hate fucking driving down the strip. I hate driving pretty much anywhere.
You hate driving anywhere. What are you talking about? The fact that I've gotten you out of your house for 2 consecutive weeks. I mean, we haven't had you out of the house for 2 consecutive episodes in years.
Since the beginning, probably. Unless I'm on the road.
Unless you're on the road.
So, like, driving down there, I was just like, and then you take a wrong turn, and then you're on the strip, and then you're like, okay, here's 30 more minutes till I get to the next light, you know, and you're just like, that's make sure, like, if you come to Vegas, make sure you know where you're going, because if you miss a turn, you make a wrong turn, there's no quick, easy turnaround in the strip. But, so yeah, going down there, I was like, all right, let me go check this place out.
Let me just make a quick note for tourists. There is absolutely zero need to drive on the strip. If somebody is driving you on the strip, they are screwing you over, man. Yeah. Do not drive on the strip whatsoever.
And
you can get anywhere you need to go.
You're going to wait forever for a car, and you're going to get charged an arm and a leg.
Yes.
And it's going to take
just saying, if they are driving you down Las Vegas Boulevard, whether it be a taxi, an Uber, a Lyft, whatever, if they are driving you down Las Vegas Boulevard proper, unless you're just asking them to be there because you want to see the sights, there is absolutely zero need. There are side streets
on both sides of the strip. Park in front of this on the strip and just look for 5 minutes, and then let's move a little bit further.
Yeah,
and then park
because that's exactly what happens. It is the worst traffic, and so if your driver ever takes you on the strip, just tell them. Just say this: say John and Cole Coffey from the MMA Roadshow told me you're screwing me over right now. Just let them know.
They said, "Why are you staying on the Boulevard, dog?"
As soon as you elicit the name the MMA Roadshow, you know, in Las Vegas, drivers will. I mean, immediately they. Oh, did you say the MMA? I apologize. Let me divert you to the proper street
now. Sir, I apologize. I'll send some of the bill back at the end.
Please don't tell them.
You know, I mean, unless you're going far on the trip, because we've talked about that as well. It's like if it's in the middle of the summer and you see something and you think it's really close,
it's not.
Double check the distance.
Yes.
It might be really far. But if you're talking about if you're down at like MGM and you want to go down to Fremont, take a car. Yes. But have them take the right way to get there.
Don't let them screw you.
Don't let them screw you. Take it through the boulevard. Get off the fucking boulevard. You cannot move on the boulevard.
There you go.
It's beautiful, but whatever.
That's the type of advice you get. But if you're a local or if you're traveling, go try out this Brazilian steak. You've been raving.
Oh, so good.
We almost didn't get to do the podcast because you were so busy raving. You just wanted to keep talking about how good the steakhouse was.
I just wanted to go back. Typically.
We're already planning the MMA Roadshow staff That's Christmas right. party
the,
there.
The we're going to bring the Christmas party.
The whole staff together. I think they do. You said they have a private room, right? Where we can host the whole staff of the whole show. I mean, that'll be amazing.
And like, we'll just take the two top.
The two top right over there.
I'm telling you, like, I wanted to go to the Golden Steer is what started the whole
thing.
It's
a classic.
It's a classic steakhouse, but it was by the time we got done doing the media day and finished, I was like, I'm ready to just go right now. And I looked on. I couldn't reserve
the
table till like after 6 or something like that. And I was like, I don't want to wait that long. And then that's what got me thinking about Texas Day Brazil. They didn't have anything open till 5:30 or so. And then I was like, oh, that's right. That place that Evie, you know, turned me on to. Dude, it was so good. So, yeah, it's in the repertoire now. It's in the rotation. So, hopefully the family comes or something. We'll
Golden
get to go
Steer,
there,
classic recommendation too, though. If you haven't ever been, if you're coming to town, you're looking for the old school Vegas experience. You know, you're looking for legit old school Vegas.
You're not
going
to find
feel.
It. It's not in the casino. It's not in any fancy place. This is literally one of those places that you hear about that's in like a strip mall, and that you're like, come on, guys,
this can't be the spot.
You fucked me.
This can't be.
You
the
sent
spot.
Me to the wrong place. This place is legit. They have like tables. Marked, you know, with like Sinatra's name and the whole Rat Pack, and like all those cats ate at this place. You know, I mean, it's history is just amazing. But the food is good. You can get some serious meats there. But that was on the first goal was yesterday. So, but when I got to after the steakhouse, I was like, I decided I ate much more meat. Steakhouse than I would have got at the Golden
Steer. Cole Coffey puts in work at Brazilian Steakhouse. I'm impressed. On the other hand, whereas I do good at like the all you can drink places. Like if you put me up on an all you can drink, I'm getting my money's worth.
Yeah, get it.
Cole Coffey though, you put him in a Brazilian Steakhouse. Like they kind of regret it at some point. But then it gets to a point where like I feel like they're just in awe. You know what I mean? Like at first they're kind of annoyed and they're like, "Oh, dude, this dude is really like taking this for a ride." And then at some point they just step back in amazement and they just go, wow, look at what this man is accomplishing.
When I ordered the chicken hearts and had him come bring it, the guy came back around. He's like, you want me to put another round of chicken hearts in for you? I was like, I bet he doesn't have to ask that to many people.
Another round of chicken hearts. You know how many chickens died just to make Cole Coffey happy
chickens
on his birthday?
See me coming, and they're just like, no.
Oh, that is phenomenal. Well, listen, I do want to throw it out there. Today's official Frosty beverage sponsor is Matt Clark. Matt Clark reached out via Venmo. Much appreciated, sir. John-Morgan-400, if anybody ever wants to hook us up with the Venmo. And he said, hey, award-winning PBR from Matt. So we're enjoying some award-winning PBR from Matt. Thank you. Oh, look at that. A little cheers to Matt Clark. Thank you, sir. And you may say, hey, why is your username John-Morgan-400? What does the 400 signify? Absolutely nothing. I just signed up for Venmo, didn't know much about it. Yeah, exactly. Dude, see, that'd have been cool. I don't even got a reason for that. I'm just John-Morgan-400. But if you ever want to support the show, we appreciate that. And while we're mentioning Frosty Beverages, I'll just say I've heard a Latchkey Brewing care package is on the way. So we'll be talking about some Latchkey Brewing very, very soon.
Oh, you know there's going to be some strangers
there.
Can't wait.
Busy week of MMA. Love it as we're sitting down on a Thursday afternoon as we always do. But PFL actually moved to Friday. So if you're an MMA fan, wonder where the hell PFL is at tonight, it's actually Friday. Does mean it's going to be a little challenge. You're going to have PFL 6 and Bellator 261 on at the same time tomorrow night. But if you're one of those fans lucky enough to have two different televisions next to each other, or maybe you got a computer next to your TV, or maybe you got a phone somewhere, you could watch a lot of MMA on Friday night. And then, of course, UFC Fight Night 190, Gane versus Volkov is the event that we're covering here in Las Vegas in our backyard. If you're just looking for MMA total, though, check this out. Ryzen is on Sunday morning. Cage Warriors is in the middle of a trilogy. So you've got three consecutive nights. So there is a ton of MMA this weekend. And I love it, man. There's never too much MMA for me. As you said, you talked about the media day. We're at UFC Fight Night 190. Gane versus Volkov. Cyril Gane versus Alexander Volkov. Heavyweight main event.
Big boys.
Big boys in the small cage. I'll tell you what, man. When they first announced this fight, I'll be honest, I was kind of like, eh. I hate to be disrespectful when I say that, but when it's a main event, I love it to have some title implications. Like, I love it. I love to know, okay.
Implications, maybe a little heat?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, there's no heat between these two dudes.
This is just
the nicest human beings
ever. Mr.
Polite
versus Mr. Polite.
Two of the nicest human beings that will not ever talk trash. You're right. So if it's I either want title implications or I want some heat.
A reason to – I mean, it would be – I was about to say a reason to watch, but that's not – there's going to be good MMA. Look, this is a reason to watch, but sometimes the extra side story – is an extra fun little angle.
I know. I feel like that adds a little impact to it, right? I mean, look, we'll talk about this card. I'm super excited about prelims. I'm a hardcore. I'm that guy. Like, there's prelim, but in a main event, I like a little something. You know, I like a little something.
Yeah.
And it's not here, but I will say, so that was when it first got announced. And then, you know, we started kind of building up to it. And, you know, we were talking about it on Spinning Backlick this week. And you know, the question that I posed to the panel was, who has more on the line here? And that is what's kind of really intriguing to me about this. Of course, anytime you have, you know, legit heavyweights, it's an exciting fight. But, you know, you got Cyril Gane, who's this undefeated cat who looks like the real deal. I mean, to be honest with you, he looks like he is a legitimate future title contender. He looks like he's a legitimate force in the division. But he's also eight fights into his MMA career. Now, you know, that makes you wonder, is he really ready for the highest level? Is he really ready, you know, to compete with these monsters up at the top of the heavyweight division? And this is the perfect test for him. I mean, you know, he already got by Jairzinho, but he didn't get by it in a way that pleased people necessarily. But it was a smart fight, and he got by it. Then you got Alexander Volkov, the guy that, you know, has been around forever, you know, and has been a champion in another organization and who's still trying to do that with the UFC. But continues to get in these spots where he's on a little roll, he's gaining a little momentum, and then he has a setback when it matters most, you know. And he's not old, despite the fact that he's 33-8, you know, a ton of experience. It's not like he's one of these guys that's 40 years old. He's actually, I believe, 32, which is insane to consider.
Yep, 32.
And heavyweight, you can go for a long time, so he could fight. I mean, he could potentially fight another, you know, 5-10 years maybe, even, you know what I mean, depending on how it goes. So it's not like it's now or never for Alexander Volkov, but, you know, once you're talking about getting, you know, 40 fights under your belt, man, you're starting to put a little mileage on the body. So and at some point too, I mean, if you're continually getting to a point and then losing and falling back down, you know, do you continue that chase or do you lose the drive for it? So I am actually pretty intrigued by this fight. I lean towards Cyril Gane as the guy that I feel has a little bit more speed. Volkov a little bit plodding for me at times.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Gane can get into the clinch, which would favor him a little bit. Volkov, I love the fact that Volkov just straight up said, like, I hope he doesn't want to wrestle. Like, I don't like wrestling. I love it when somebody else strike with me, and I think this guy is going to strike with me. But I feel like Volkov does have a tendency to get hit sometimes, and I think that opens up a lot of doors. You know, I was actually taking a look at the numbers behind it, and it kind of confirmed me what I was thinking in my head. Volkov's striking defense is 56%, meaning that 44% of the shots that are thrown against him land, whereas Gane's striking defense is at 69%. So, you know, he's taking significantly less blows.
Granted, he's only had eight fights.
And less UFC fights. I will say this, too. Among active UFC heavyweights, this is another stat that stood out to me as well. Among active UFC heavyweights, Alexander Volkov has the most striking accuracy in the division. Cyril Gane has the second most striking accuracy in the division. So you get the feeling that somebody's going to land and somebody's going to fall. Their average fight time for both of them, 13-18 for Gane, 14-50. So 13 minutes, 18 seconds, average fight time for Gane, 14 minutes, 15 seconds for Volkov. Now, a lot of these guys have been in three-round fights, so they've had some decisions, but they've done some fights. But, you know, look for something, I guess, to maybe happen around that third round is what we're seeing here. So, I don't know. I'm more intrigued by this. I think there aren't necessarily immediate stakes. And this goes back to what we've talked about before. It's that John Jones specter looming over the division that's kind of slowing things up right now. And I guess, listen, I mean, I don't know if we could say too much, but I mean, you're hearing rumblings that maybe Ngannou and Lewis isn't even 100% guaranteed at this point. There seems to be some problems. You know, I think there's been some reports that, not happening in August, but probably going to happen in September. I think you heard a couple rumblings that maybe not September either.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, I think, like you said, you know, Houston was one of those areas they were trying to get something set, and it made complete sense that that would be where that fight would happen. So Derek could be there and they can get the home crowd. But I think, if anything, I can see where some people maybe wouldn't want that. I can see where Ngannou wouldn't want that. Why go and defend my belt in the challenger's home court?
Right.
Doesn't make any sense. So in that sense of, like, you know, there maybe not being a location that makes sense, or there's the UFC isn't able to provide another location to make it work, that's going to put that fight at jeopardy, you know? And so it seems like, yeah, there's still some issues with that, you know, happening that I figure we would have heard something by now. It makes complete sense that we would have heard. And, like, fight's been talked about.
If we know that's the fight to make, what's the holdup?
What's the holdup? It doesn't make any sense, you know. So, be interesting to see. I think we'll probably hear something very soon, one way or another, involving some of the people in there. So we shall see. But just going back quickly on this fight, you're right. I mean, these heavyweights, nice guys. But I agree with you. I think Gon has more speed. He has, you know, just that power that, you know, if Volkov can keep the distance and uses his reach, you know, I think he has a decent enough chance. But Gon kind of always pushes in and gets in there close, you know, and that's not gonna bode well for Volkov. And Volkov does get punched. And I think this kind of power, I mean, we saw what happened with the Derek Lewis. I mean, Derek maintained that power all the way through the fight and caught him.
Yep.
Literally, he was in the winning stretch. He had it in the bag, and he got caught, and he got flattened. And Gon's got that same sort of crazy, just ridiculous power. But that's another one, too, where, you know, Gon talked all the right things, but if somebody – I think he's believing in himself, and he's believing he's in the right track. So I don't think he's going to get ahead of himself. But this is the kind of fight where some undefeated guy is going to come in knowing, feeling like he can knock anybody out as long as he just touches him. If he makes one mistake, Volkov is still a very dangerous guy that has decent power as well. I think Gon could eat a couple of those punches, but if he gets in the habit of eating a lot of those, and then if he does tire out, if the rounds go on, we know Volkov can make it through.
Yep.
No problem. I mean, the dude's got great cardio. He'll be able to keep pushing the pace the entire fight.
Yep.
If it's like that through all three, or I'm sorry, all these rounds, now we're getting to championship rounds, and we just haven't really seen Gon be tested through those. So, and we know once these guys get, you know, tired, their chin gets a little bit, you know, a little easier to find.
Yep.
And it'd be interesting. But this is the kind of fight that it would. When you raised who had more to lose, I feel Gon has more to lose, because once you lose that shine,
then you're just another guy.
You're just another guy.
Right. Doesn't mean you can't get there.
Right.
But I feel like I agree with you. I feel like he's kind of on that fast track. You know what I mean? Where he's got that shine. He's got the ties.
Completely fast tracking.
He's got the ties to the French for the French market, which now, as soon as the world starts to open back up, you know they're going to go to Paris. They were supposed to do that this year. Didn't happen, but, you know, that's on the radar as soon as they can go there. You know, and the undefeated record is sparkly. And you're right. Once you lose that, it's not to say that if you lose that, you're never going to be a champion or you're never going to get to that point. But you lost that fast track, that little shine that he's got right now.
And Volkov, I mean, even with the win right here, it's not like it propels him right back up into the title mix. It keeps him in the mix. But if he loses, I don't feel like he falls out of the mix either. He's still a dangerous guy that's been fighting the top of the division. I just feel like he could take a loss and not lose as much ground or as much momentum as Cyril will.
Yep.
So, but it should be good. I mean, like you said, man, both really, really nice guys. Not that I'm rooting for either one. I'd be happy if either one of them get a win, honestly.
Should say, by the way, an early card. So 1 p.m. Eastern for the prelims, 4 p.m. Eastern for the main card. So that means right here in Vegas, we're talking about a 10 a.m. start on Saturday morning. In fact, you know what? I totally forgot. I'm glad it says them. Don't forget the weigh-ins are actually an hour early tomorrow morning, too.
Glad
I remember that. I'm so used to it. We've been doing the same thing every week. So even the weigh-ins tomorrow morning will be at 8 a.m. local instead of 9 a.m. local. So a little bit earlier start tomorrow. Again, a main event that doesn't have title implications, certainly doesn't have heat. These guys are not trash talkers by any stretch of the imagination. I do want to say, Alexander Volkov, he had the right move. Foreign fighters trying to learn or trying to continue to market themselves in English, take a lesson from Alexander Volkov. Answered every question in English, but had a translator repeat the question to him in Russian, so he
just
made sure he understood the question right. He understood the nuances of the question. Because you see that a lot with fighters trying to answer in English, and I applaud them because they get it, man. There's a ton of English-speaking fans, and the more you can market yourself, the better. But as media members, we see it. Sometimes we ask a question, they answer, and you're like, bro, that is not even close to what I
asked.
I feel
like that even happened maybe yesterday. It either happened yesterday with somebody else or maybe in the recent post-fight.
It did actually happen the other day, where it was a translation issue. But it's like, you know, so he had the question. I thought that was it. That's the move right there. If you're trying to speak in English, have a translator there anyway to help it repeat the questions so you know exactly what it is.
Luckily, he had a good one.
He did have a good one.
The UFC's not really providing these. Unfortunately, it's the fighters been bringing their own, you know, which is kind of bizarre. He brought a good one.
We've had
some others where it's just like cornermen, coaches.
And they're doing their best.
But
it ain't great.
But they're not translators by trade. You know, they do as best they can. That post-fight interview the other day with Nemegulov.
Yeah.
I had asked his question, and his coach / translator like, could you repeat? And I kept having to do it every one. At this point, I was like, I don't even want to do this anymore. I was like, can we just stop?
That's funny.
But yeah, it makes it really, really hard.
Nikolai Nemegorani, right?
By the way,
I'm glad you mentioned his name. I had a conversation. I'll just leave it. I won't say who I had a conversation with because it was a private conversation. But I will say, you know, there was some controversy in that with the number of warnings that happened and how many fence grabs happened. And it was a very positive conversation, and it was with some officials behind the scenes. And it was nice to hear, you know, they wanted to address the fact that, hey, FYI, you know, we're talking about things like this and we're reviewing things like this. And your guys' complaints about what's getting missed and how things being enforced, we're listening to that and we're trying to make sure we get better at it. You know what I mean? I thought that was cool to hear that.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, the referees, the judges.
Fall on deaf ears.
That's it.
You don't think anything happens.
I think fans, you know, they these judges, these referees, they don't care. They just show up and do, and they leave. It's not, man. These people do care. They want to get it right. Most of them are very, very passionate about the industry. They're very passionate about the sport, and they want to get it right.
Yep.
And it was a very big point of discussion to say, yeah, you know what? Maybe that many warnings is problematic. And I get it. You know, dude, it's got to be so hard for these officials to know if you deduct a point, you are unquestionably affecting the outcome of that fight, especially in a 3-round fight.
Yep.
I mean, you know, we talk about boxing, you know, 10 rounds, 12 rounds. If you take a point, okay, it might affect it, but maybe not. A 3-round fight, it's affecting the outcome. Like, obviously, unless it's 30-27, that's the only way you can avoid affecting it. Because if it's 29-28, it's now a draw.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I know it's got to be hard for them. But anyway, it was nice to hear because it was somebody that reached out to me that said, hey, by the way, your guys' complaints, we heard them. And we're talking about it. And
that's all you can hope for.
That's all you can hope for, man. I thought that was such a positive thing. All right, let's do this. Before we talk about the rest of this UFC card, I want to give PFL some love because they do have a big event this weekend.
The weigh-ins is wrapping up right here in front of me.
That's fantastic. and it's we can talk about it. A lot of times we just kind of glaze right through PFL because it's happening either while we're recording this podcast or it's going to be in the hours after. But because it's on Friday, I want to give them a little love. And because PFL reached out and set me up with a couple of big names, including Kayla Harrison, who, listen, I'm just going to set it up off the top. I'm a believer in Kayla Harrison. I think she is everything that she says she is. You know, whether or not she'll get to prove that in the UFC remains to be seen. But But we'll talk about that. I had a nice conversation with Kayla Harrison about a number of topics, and I wanted to share that with you guys ahead of her headlining spot against Cindy Dandois at 2021 PFL 6. So here is Kayla Harrison.
It's another week for you, another main event on ESPN, ESPN2, I guess, but it's still the ESPN family. I mean, is it still like a big deal to you? Is it exciting at all to be headlining shows, or is this just another day at the office for you?
I mean, every time I fight, I get pretty excited. So it could be in a bar and I still get excited.
That's awesome. Well, you look at it. All right, coming in, you're actually in second place, even though you got the big win. Do you look at the standings at all? I mean, do you do the math? I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but I don't think you're guaranteed a playoff at this point.
No, I don't look at the scoreboard or do the math, but I mean, I know I'm going to go out there and get a win and do my job. So just one step at a time.
No doubt.
I'm never in first. I wasn't in first last time in the tournament. It's just
I know, right?
Unbelievable.
That's great. I'm curious, you know, this season, it's been interesting. I mean, it doesn't affect you, but PFL brought in some high-profile additions, right? A lot of big names. Mm-hmm. And they haven't exactly blown away the competition, right? I mean, Anthony struggled a little bit. Rory, I think, is a questionable decision at best, but we saw Fabricio. I mean, has that been eye-opening for you at all to see these high-profile names, you know, not exactly just come in and wipe people out?
No, I mean, I think that I kind of, I don't want to say I expected it, but I mean, it's, you know, for one, I think when you watch the season and you watch the fights, you could have all kinds of fighters who aren't big names, who aren't stars, who aren't whatever, maybe don't even have the best records. But when you watch these fights, these people are like, they're going after it, you know. They're fighting for their lives. They're fighting for the opportunity to better their lives, to win $1 million. You know, it doesn't matter. Nothing matters except that performance inside of the cage and if you win or if you lose. So I'm not surprised by it. I think that it's tough. You know, every fight counts. Everything matters when you're in the PFL. So, you know, it's good to see that the promotion is bringing in big names and big stars, but I think maybe better to build big names and big stars.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, to me, in a lot of ways, it validates what you've done even more. I mean, your run, you know, you've had the target on your back since you came in there, and we're seeing these people who clearly had targets on their back, and they struggled a little bit. Does it kind of make you even more proud to say, you know, look at what I've been able to do?
I mean, I try not to compare myself too much to anyone. I feel like the media does a good enough job of that for me with the rest of the world. But I mean, I am proud of what I've accomplished. I'm proud of, you know, everything I do inside the cage and outside the cage. I try to live my life, you know, in a good way. And I work hard. I train hard. I deserve to win. And it feels good when I go out there and do what I'm supposed to do.
Does this run feel at all like it did when you were trying to repeat as a gold medalist, right? Like you've already been there, you've done it, you've accomplished all that. So I wonder if that repeat mentality is helpful, because I could see maybe, I don't want to say motivation being a problem, but yeah, I mean, when you've already done it, it's a little bit less exciting to have the chase, right? To do it again is a little tougher.
I mean, I think I would say that I have a little more nerves this year. Not nerves, but like anticipation and excitement. You know, I know that every fight is a tough fight. I've learned from experience not to take anyone lightly, especially Larissa Pacheco. I think that so many times in my judo career, I fought the same girls over and over and over again. And this kind of feels like that a little bit. So it's just about going out there and instilling my will and being dominant. And, you know, this is the last year on my contract. So putting a big emphatic stamp on me being the baddest woman on the planet and going out there and proving it.
Yeah. I was kind of curious if, you know, I know you said you don't look at the standings, but are there any matchups you're hoping to avoid? Like, I was wondering, are you like, please don't make me fight Pacheco again? Like, I don't want to fight a third time.
I think that she's definitely the second best in the division. You know, after what I saw from the first fights, I think she's just a very well-rounded fighter. I think she's a lot better than people give her credit for just because of her young days in the UFC. But I think in 145 and 155, she's a top five fighter in the world. So I think it's inevitable. I would like to fight somebody different just to continue to get experience, but I never get what I want, so.
We'll see how it all plays out. First, of course, you got Sydney Dantois this weekend. A judo black belt. I'm curious, right? Like, she is such an interesting fighter. Her style is so unique to her. And she does have a judo background, so it's intriguing. But I she's also not a two-time gold medalist judoka, you know what I mean? So what do you expect? I mean, do you think that she's going to want to clinch and see what happens there? Or do you think no?
No, I think she's going to want to. I mean, I think that people tend to go to where they're comfortable, especially when shit's getting crazy inside of a cage. So, no, I definitely expect her to grapple. I think she might even pull guard at some point. I know she's got some funky submissions and leg locks and stuff like that. I expect her to try and catch me with something like that. But, you know, I've overprepared for this. I'm more than ready. My team has done all of the research and studying, and they've done their due diligence, and we're ready for wherever the fight goes.
Would that be a mental test for you if she was actually able to toss you?
Oh, my God. That's not – no, it's not going to
happen. It's not even a possibility? No.
I mean, I would like to say that I'll retire if that happens, but I shouldn't say shit like that. So I'm going to say – listen, I've overcome a lot of adversity in my life, so – at least at MMA, if you get thrown on your back, the match isn't over, right? I still have an opportunity to win. So,
I was going to say, look, I know it would be difficult to happen. If it happened, it'd be funny. I would be interested to see if you would be pissed off or if you would smile laugh at how ridiculous it would be.
No, I would be furious. Let's not even. Don't make me angry right now, okay? I'm in my Zen bubble.
We'll relax. We'll relax. listen, after this fight, you'll have about a 2-month break. The Olympics will pop up during that time. Will you, do you watch the Olympics anymore? I mean, is it something that interests you, or now that your time's over, do you move on?
Yeah, I haven't really followed judo circuit that much, but obviously the Olympics are truly unique and special. I actually got asked to commentate for NBC, for the judo portion, but I don't think it's going to be able to work out with the schedule of fighting and having two kids, and it's going to be tough. So I don't think I'm going to be able to commentate this year. I wish I could, because that would be a lot of fun and great experience, but we'll see.
Maybe in the future. That would be a very cool opportunity for you.
For sure. I actually had to do an audition and everything, and I was like,
wow,
I'm nervous, but it was fun.
That's awesome. I want to get your take. I don't
know the rules anymore.
Well, that's pretty bad if you don't know the rules. I want to get your take. We hear the debate a lot. So I've kind of left it, but now I'm kind of interested again. MMA is an Olympic sport. Could it ever happen? Should it ever happen? It seems to me like it's almost impossible to do. But what do you think? Is it possible at all?
I mean, it's possible, I guess, but it's not probable. Like, I think MMA and the biggest promotions have they sort of got their model based off boxing, which is way more entertainment based versus sport based. And in order to be an Olympic sport, you have to meet all kinds of criteria. You have to have one unified government. You have to have one unified set of rules. You have to have participation in X amount of countries. You have to have viewership in X amount of countries. You have to have complete equality between men and women. Like, there's a ton of stuff you have to do in order to qualify as an Olympic sport. And I think that would be, I mean, can you even just imagine all of MMA, like, getting together and deciding on anything in unison? Like, never mind one government. Like, can you imagine them just all getting together just to do anything?
No.
I think it would be tough.
That's good. But that's it. So it's funny, because your argument against it is about the way of pulling it together. But as an athlete, I mean, do you think it'd be – because that's what I've always heard is the argument. It's like, how could you fight that frequently, that close? But you don't even think that's the biggest hurdle.
Oh, no. I mean, that would be another huge hurdle if you got past all the other 37 hurdles that I just mentioned. But, I guess I never thought about fighting that frequently. It would be really tough. I know that there's an international MMA federation that is like, they have like a beginner's program, a grassroots program, and they have a IMMAF world championships and stuff like this. I don't know what their rule sets are. I don't know if they wear headgear or shin guard. I don't know exactly what they do. It would be really tough, I think, to make MMA an Olympic sport. And the MMA that you see now, like in PFL and Bellator and UFC, like that would, there's no way that would be possible in the Olympics. Like,
yeah, it'd have to be heavily modified.
Can you imagine, like, Dustin fighting Max Holloway in the semifinals and then a day later having to fight Conor McGregor? Like, that doesn't even make any, you know, like, it would be impossible.
Yeah, when you put it that way, it sounds pretty crazy. It sounds pretty crazy. Well, let me ask you another Olympics-related question. Clarissa Shields, have you had a chance to talk to her afterwards? I know you said you kind of see yourself as a bit of a mentor to her and help. Have you had a chance to talk to her since her debut? And what, you know, what were your take overall?
I just said good job. You know, I think I'm not like, I don't want to be, I know that she has talked about wanting to fight in the season next year and wanting to fight me in the future. So I don't want to be like too big sistery to her. I kind of just like, you know, I said, good job, you know, way to go, watched you. I think we all knew that she was going to have holes. We all knew that she was going to struggle in some aspects of the game, which she did. But she's a winner, and she found a way to win, which is what winners do. So I applaud her for that. I think it PFL's job is a little bit tougher from this point on. Like, where do you go from here? And I think that hopefully now – this whole, like, Kayla fighting Clarissa thing can be put to bed, because it's just, like, it doesn't make any sense. You know, it would be like you guys saying, oh, Kayla should fight Amanda after I had my first fight. Like, it doesn't make any sense, you know? Like, why?
Right.
No, that's stupid. Stop.
I agree. She did show, like you said, though, she showed a lot of heart, a lot of athleticism. And, Absolutely. Boy, she finds a way to land those punches. The strikes that she was able to throw mm-hmm. were vicious.
They were. She's got fast hands. I was impressed. Nope.
No question. Where do you think you stand in your own development? I mean, do you feel at this point you are a fully developed martial artist? I'm not saying you can't get better. Everybody can get better. Obviously, everybody's improving. But do you feel you're a fully developed mixed martial artist at this point?
No. I mean, I think no. I keep getting better. I think I can keep getting better. I think what's crazy to me is like how little I've been able to showcase how well-rounded I am. Because when I'm sparring and when I'm, you know, I don't get takedowns every round in sparring because these mofos that I'm sparring, you know, sprawl. Like it's, so my striking has had to develop. I've had to get good at being on my feet. I'd never show it in a fight, but I would like for that to come through at some point. But I also just want to win. So I have to go do what I'm best at, which is win. It's tough. I think that I'm going to just continue to get better. And I think what's good for me, what makes me feel confident, and what makes me feel better is there. If there is ever a day that comes where a female is able to stop a takedown, like I'm not going to be a fish out of water. I'm not going to be like, oh God, what do I do now? Like, I'm going to be comfortable. I'm going to be confident. I'm going to stay composed. And who knows? Maybe I'll actually get a knockout someday. Maybe. Who knows?
Well, I was going to ask, I mean, do you guys talk theory or do you think, because here's what I see in martial artists sometimes, especially specialists. It's like they get to a point in their career where they want to show, hey, I can strike. So they go into fights thinking strike first, even though, as you said, using your base, using what got you to the dance, that's what helps you win because you're light years above other people there. So do you ever talk about that? Like, do you go into a fight thinking, I want to display something?
I mean, we definitely talk about it against opponents, you know, we've talked about it a lot. I never do it. I mean, we always think I'm going to do it. And then I get in the cage and I don't do it. So, listen, I'm not going to fall in love with striking and like, be like, oh, I'm only going to strike. I'm only going to like, no, I'm going to go where the fight goes. I'm going to take what's given to me or I'm going to take it by force. Well, but yeah, we talk about it. I just don't know.
I think that's smart. I think you stick with what, you know, you're the world's best like, at, you know,
if it's all about numbers to me, like if you're 99.9 on grappling and you're only 50 on striking and this girl's, you know, maybe she's only 30 on striking, but she's a 30 on grappling, like why wouldn't I grapple? Like, who wants to give anyone a chance to get, you know, like I don't want to give anyone a chance. I don't want to let them breathe when they're in there with me. Like, I want to go out there and get it over with. I want to
That's awesome. That's awesome. Hey, one last kind of big picture question I want to ask you. I really didn't occur to me until recently, but I was thinking about this the other day. You know, people talk about like the featherweight division, the women's featherweight division, and of course the lightweight division you're in being like a little thin or not having as much talent. But then I think about it, you, Amanda, and Cyborg. I mean, Amanda and Cyborg are obviously two of the greatest to ever do it. Mm-hmm. And you're on your way to being one of those as well. If you girls were all under one umbrella, it'd be one hell of a division. So do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing that all three of you are in different organizations? I guess on the one hand, it's like you're all stars in your own organization. But on the other hand, if you were all together, I think people would say, holy cow, look how deep that division is.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's definitely a lot of good fighters at 45 and 55. I think that they are scattered amongst all the promotions. I mean, selfishly, I think it sucks because I want to fight the best. But, you know, for my bank account, for Amanda's bank account, for Cyborg's bank account, like, it works out, right? We all are making good money. We're all stars. We all get to live a good life. And, like, it's great. But it would be so badass to yeah, there are a lot. It's not a thin division. It's just that it's spread out, you know? Like, it's not, I don't know. It takes time to build big things, so.
Well, I was going to say, and there's more talent developing. You guys are showing the way that, hey, you know, there's, you know, there's a lucrative career in doing this. So.
For sure. I have no doubt that 10 years from now, women's MMA will be like cutthroat, you know, impossible to like how you see the men's divisions now. I think 10 years from now, the women's divisions will be equally as competitive and equally as difficult to break through in the ranks. You know, we have so many guys at the gym, all killers. And it's like they fight on local promotions and are killers, you know? And I'm like, what the like, Jesus.
No question about it. You said you're into your contract this year. Is it going to be a tough decision to figure out what's next? Is it all just come down to who's going to show you the money? Or is it going to be a hard choice for you to make?
You know, I gotta get through the season. I got to go out there and do my job. I got to put a big emphasis on I'm the baddest woman on the planet. Here, let me show you why. I got to make people pay attention and be so good that you can't ignore me. And just go out there and kill right now. And then we'll see what happens.
That's awesome. Well, the next step is Friday night, not Thursday night, right? It's Friday night. Make sure everybody knows.
Friday.
You've been saying it over and over. You've won established that you're the baddest woman on the planet. So the goal here, I'm guessing it's more than just win. You feel like you got to get style points. What is the goal here?
I mean, I want to win by TKO, KO, or submission. You know, I want to go out there and just I want to be scary. I want people to look at me and go, God, she's scary. That's it.
All right, Kayla Harrison ahead of her headlining spot. You know, kind of, I guess, a lot to unpack. I mean, we consider and dissected it. We touched on a lot of topics. And that's why I like speaking with Kayla because I think she addresses things pretty openly and pretty freely. Listen, I do favor her over Cindy Dandois, so my conversation wasn't necessarily geared towards that fight as much. No disrespect to Cindy, but, you know, Cindy's got some great grappling and some judo. Kayla Harrison has two-time gold medal winning judo and I mean, just insane power, explosiveness, that sort of thing. So I think she's in.
Her ground and pound is just ridiculous. It's vicious.
But I think she's the real deal. You know, I'm just going to side with her on this. You know, I think from what I've heard behind the scenes, PFL really wants to put together Clarissa Shields and Kayla Harrison.
Because that would be such a good fight.
Yeah, I just. You can't do it, as she said. You know, I mean, I think she was trying
to be. Did you not feel my sarcasm?
Yeah, I know exactly. I felt your sarcasm. I'll say. You know, I think she was trying to be as respectful as possible there and support her fellow Olympian, but you can't do that.
That would she would just absolutely just wreck Clarissa. If that
I almost choked and died there.
If Brittany Elkins could hold her down and make her feel inadequate, Kayla would just, oh my Lord. I just feel like Kayla could, with one arm, sort of hold her down, then, you know, sort of lock up her legs, and just with the right arm will literally finisher with strikes.
Let the world know that Cole Coffey just completely no-sold me, almost dying over here. He just, he's like, I thought I was gone. I thought this was it. This was going to be the final episode of the MMA Roadshow. 326 fantastic episodes.
I didn't
episodes.
See you grab the heart and just say, it's the big one.
I thought I
was. It's the big one.
But no, you're right about that. So I hope. I'll be honest. I hope they don't put that fight together. I just think it would ruin Clarissa Shields' progress as a martial artist, and obviously a fantastic striker.
Or would it be a great eye opener for her?
The kind of eye opening that makes you realize I'm closing my eyes now and I'm never fighting MMA again. So
It would be tough for her at the very beginning to literally fight the woman that is one of the best ones.
Exactly as you said. That would be like putting me against Amanda Nunes after my first fight. That makes no sense. Yeah. So, and listen, where she goes next, if she finishes up the season, as she mentioned, she's a free agent after the season. I would love to see her go to the UFC. I really do believe she's got the skills to be a champion. I really do believe she's got the skills. She doesn't like talking about it, but I believe she has the skills to potentially beat Amanda Nunes. Of course, she has to get by the striking. Amanda is a better striker, but she's getting better every day, and I'd love to see it. But, listen, if PFL is going to keep investing in her, to use her as the face of the company, I see fans going, oh, who's this girl saying she's going to be the baddest woman on the planet? You're not the baddest woman on the planet if you don't come to the UFC. And I get it. I mean, I've always said it's difficult to be – like, it would be hard for me to rank her number one pound for pound in the world if she doesn't come to the UFC and beat the top contenders. That would be difficult for me to do. So I get that. But I just caution anybody who writes her off and says she's not that good because she's not in the UFC. We've seen it over and over. Like, I do believe she's capable of beating anybody in the UFC. And I'd like to see her in the UFC. But if PFL is going to pay her more money, you stay in PFL, right? You just stay there.
And she's fighting at a weight class that she's more – she's
doesn't have to cut.
She doesn't have to cut. She's happy with the 55. I think she's strong. She feels good. Granted, it probably wouldn't be the hardest cut for her to drop 10 pounds, but what if the featherweight goes away?
That's true.
She can't come up with the UFC and then be expected to try to go down to bantamweight.
I don't think she could do 35. I don't think so either. She is way too big.
She probably could, but it would be really bad for her.
Yeah.
I don't think she would have the same sort of dominant performance.
When you see her in person, like, she is...
She's a decent size.
She's big.
She's thick, man. Yeah. I mean, like, she's got great, big, strong legs. She's not like a... when we say thick, people have the wrong connotations. She's just very muscular.
Muscular.
Very, very
muscular.
Sort of, stocky. And that's works at 55. As she starts going down, depending on the weight class, she's going to have to shed muscle. And when she sheds that muscle, she's going to start shedding some of that advantage that she has and just leaps and bounds at 155. She is going to literally manhandle Dandois. And I like Cindy. I think she's a nice girl.
She's the sweetest girl.
She is so outclassed in this, in every aspect, striking on the ground. If it gets past the first round,
I'd be shocked.
I would be shocked, and I would give Cindy a lot of kudos.
I'd be shocked. She's shocked.
She's just really outclassed in this one.
She's soft.
But they're in a hard place. I mean, who are you going to put in front? They just don't have the people. That's why she needs to go where there's more people, but...
Unless she's getting paid a lot of money.
Unless she's getting paid. Who wouldn't want to stay with a lesser roster that you just manhandle or woman handle in this case, and you're getting a nice big fat paycheck?
That's what you do.
I'd stay.
Listen, I should say, if you like what you listen to, make sure you take a second and log in to wherever you're listening to, and make sure you take a second to rate us, review us. That helps us out a lot. Apple Podcasts is where I check it out. The last person that left us some feedback there, it's been a couple months. Come on, we need some feedback in there. If you haven't ever left us feedback in there, do it. The last one that left us feedback, I don't remember if I read this or not, it was Timmy El Jefe. And he said, he left us 5 stars, by the way, which I really appreciate that. He said, first question, go ahead, John Morgan. And then that was the title. And then the feedback was, great podcast. Anything Morgan does is solid.
Oh.
I'm blushing right now. I'm blushing. Or if you really like what you listen to, make sure you step your game up. Help support the show. Patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. You can log in over there for as little as $3 a month. You can help support us. If you want to jump up to those bigger levels of $5 or $10 a month, then you can
star.
Then you're just directing us at that point. We'll literally.
I forgot to ask questions for this.
Thanks, Cole Coffee.
Damn it.
We're supposed to be reaching out to ask those questions. But you know what I want to do?
It was my birthday.
It is your birthday. You get to.
I have to send out.
You get to pass on those. But
sorry, everyone.
Apologies. Here's what we're going to do to make up for it. We always like to shout out people that are joining up, that are just, you know, kind of coming on board. And we like to let them know, hey, we see you. We appreciate you. But you know what we don't do enough of that I'm going to do right now?
What's that?
Recognize the OGs of the game. So let me shout out a couple people that definitely need some shout outs. The people that, you know, we already talked to over at patreon.com/the NBA Roadshow. That's the spot where we all kind of interact over there, have our little community over there. We share some exclusive stuff, including the and a half episodes after every single USC event, which is basically every single week. But shout out number one, of course, goes to Ryan Vannoy, who is incredibly kind behind the scenes.
Foundation member.
He holds
the foundation.
Really honestly think there's a real case to be made that this podcast should be renamed Ryan Vannoy Presents the MMA Roadshow with John Morgan. That's how kind Ryan Vannoy is to us behind the scenes. He is, as you said, the foundation member. But then you got some solid OGs that have been there from the start. Listen to this crew that's been here from the start. Shout out these names, man. Mark Fellows, of course. Jared Sorensen. Joe from H-Town. Joe Caldwell. Jake Gajulo. Muna Bear. Our man Muna. I had to throw in the bear. That's not really his name, but he's Muna Bear to me.
That's his social handle.
That's what I'm saying. Hans Bjorklund. Brent Barnett.
Hans Brown forever.
Sean Carlson. All these OGs.
And many more that I'm
from
sure.
From day one. And listen, I don't mean to leave other people out there. I'm going to start shouting out people a little bit more because we appreciate the support.
Yep.
But these are the OGs of the game. These are day one. This is P1, day one, hardcore OGs. That crew right there, mad respect.
Yeah. I'm all thrown off now. The fact that I just now remembered that I was going to put out a question thing yesterday.
It's his birthday.
It was my birthday. I fucking just completely spaced.
He had the meat sweats and totally forgot.
Like legit meat sweats. Legit meat sweats. When you get the meat sweats while you're halfway through and knowing that you still got to go in more, you're like, all right, we got to pace ourselves. You know, when you're in a deep fight and you're really gutting it out and you know you got to push yourself to the next level, I was at that point and I said, you can't quit. Don't quit, son. There's people looking up to you. There's people that are like, I want to eat that meat too. So you eat that meat, son. And so I heard that voice in my back of my head. I was like, I can do it. Should I get more fried cheese? They would want me to get more fried cheese. So I got some more fried cheese. And then they brought the picanha, and I said, sir, no, my button is red. I should, but I'm not a quitter. Hold on, you had reached
a status where even with a red button, they still served you meat.
They kept coming. Well, no, they finally stopped, but no, I grabbed them after I had it red button. If you've ever been to Brazilian Steakhouse, a lot of time they have a button or a tab or anything that's green and red. Green means bring me the meats. The red means I'm fucking dying over here. Stop bringing them. They were coming so quick. I was like, I my plate's
loaded. Put it on red right now.
Put it on red.
And don't be afraid to put it on red for a little bit. Don't come back. You got to have strategy.
And then I went red, and at some point I was like, I don't really want to come. So I just flagged them over. I was like, hey, you can bring that back. I'm not going fully green.
I'm bringing it over. You talk about veteran strategies. You see, that's
oh man,
that's a veteran move right there. That's somebody that understands the game. You know,
my fight matters. That was my fight.
You come in and you make your Truist Correa debut. You're just excited to be there. You know what I'm saying? You get the Truist Correa jitters. I mean, we've all seen it happen.
Jitters is real. It's real shit. It's real, and it's been a while. So I was a little. I had some Truist Correa rust.
Oh, the Truist Correa rust, but you were able to shake it off.
Some people say it's not a real thing. You know, but
Dominic Cruz says the Truist Correa rust is not a real thing.
I was like, is it here? Am I as good as I was? Am I a little slow? But I worked through it.
Yeah.
I worked through it.
That's amazing. I think what's awesome is that while you were eating yesterday during that, you know, you sent me a couple messages, which was cool. You showed me the spread that you were working. But then I know you also, you FaceTimed with Mark Hunt as well, and you showed him. You said, Mark, look at what I got going here. Look at my skills. Look at my Truist Correa game.
It was crazy.
And I think you collected that audio, right, of his reply.
It was really quick. Let me play it. Eat more. That's all he said. He told me to eat more, and I was like, I'm doing it for him.
He's to the point. Mark Hunt gets to the point. You know what I mean?
He's not a really long talker. He just kind of gets to it. And I was like, dude, I was moved to tears. When he said, like, eat more, I was like, I can't stop.
You think Mark Hunt, when he goes to Triscuria, he hits the walk-off Triscuria, like, you know what I mean? He just one last piece of meat, and he just slams it and then just turns around and walks off, hand in the air.
Hand in the air? I don't know, but I think I will next time I go to the one.
The Triscuria walk-off, dude.
And then I want them to slow clap and applaud because they walk out the door, they're like, I've never seen such a thing.
Just a tear rolls down their eyes. They see you walk out of there. They're like, that is a Churrascaria master. That's the Churrascaria goat. You might be the Churrascaria goat.
Some people have their dreams, and some people just made for certain things.
All right, let's talk about UFC Fight Night 190 co-main event, Tanner Bowser versus Ovince St. Preux. Kind of a weird fight. I mean, one that came out of left field, of course. Ovince St. Preux lost his original opponent, Maxim Grishin. They paired him up as a heavyweight with Tanner Bowser, which, you know, Tanner Bowser's not the biggest heavyweight, of course. You know, he always says, look, I can't cut to light heavyweight even if I wanted to, but not that big. An interesting fight, and Tanner has a little chip on his shoulder. He's a little angry. I mean,
he came in super angry at the beginning. I was like, what is going on here?
I feel like he was incredibly annoyed that he had to talk to us and tried to, try to keep him in good spirits. I don't know if we did that or not.
He did by the end. At the beginning, I was like, I was giving you credit in my mind. I was like, man, if I was John, I'd be like, fuck this, dude. I'm done with this. He was giving so much attitude at the beginning. I was just like, God, he is not happy right now. I was like, why did we get pushed early to do this? I was thinking like, oh, he's amped. He's ready to do this. He wants to do this. And then once he started going, I was like, oh, no, he just wants to get the hell out of here.
That's it.
You know?
They actually started the whole media day early, sent us an email to like, hey, guys, show up earlier than you're supposed to because Tanner Bowser wants to go. And then it's clear he didn't want to speak to us. So he's angry. He's pissed off that he's had losses. He wants to pick up a win here. Was frustrated at his last result. And now he's fighting a couple weeks later. Of course, he lost the decision to Ilir Latifi. He thought he should have won that fight. I did score the fight for Ilir Latifi as well, but I understand his frustration. Now he wants to win a fight. So he's got a chip on his shoulder. Ovince St. Preux kind of laughed. He's like, I've seen some of his anger. He's like, I don't know. It's not directed to me, so it's not my fault. But we'll see how that plays out, if it's a good thing or a bad thing for Tanner Bowser. Danilo Marcus versus Kennedy Njeku. Kennedy, of course, was in that absolute war last time out, but kind of made it very clear, like, I don't want to be in that kind of fight again where I'm taking a ton of damage. I've worked on making things a little bit smoother, a little bit better. And we're going to do, you know, we're going to try to fight a little bit cleaner this time out. Meanwhile, Danilo Marcus, kind of a veteran of the game, finally in the UFC, and has Damian Maia in his corner, which is pretty awesome to see, man. Damian hasn't done a lot of cornering in his career, but he's actually in his corner. And then, as I said, the rest is, you know, this fight card, we talked about, you know, maybe the headliner doesn't have the huge appeal that we want, but I think this little three-pack of fights to get the main card started, Andre Feely versus Daniel Pineda, Nicholas Dalby versus Tim Means, and Jai Herbert versus Renato Moicano. Come on, man. I mean, that to me, that looks like three bangers back to back to back. So, man, I think, you know, this ESPN Plus exclusive on a Saturday afternoon, like I said, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific for the main card. What else you got going on, man? This looks like, to me, looks like fun fights. You know, Andre Feely, I guess, was probably one of the most memorable interviews, just saying wants to stay busy, you know, doesn't want that layoff anymore.
That's another guy that always has good energy coming in on
great
fight weeks.
Energy, and
he's always fun to see.
It's probably worth checking out Andre Feely's interview as well. I loved his answer about Daniel Pineda when we talked about, hey, does this, you know, it looks on paper like this is going to be an exciting fight. And he mentioned, hey, I'm excited to get matched up with Pineda. And I love what he said. He's like, dude, he's like, I seen this guy fight. He's like, I never met him before. I know him. He's like, I know what he's like. He's like, I know this is a fighter. This is a dude that's coming in to bang. He's not coming to run. He's not coming to outpoint. He's coming to actually strike. I know who this guy is. He's like, I'm excited about it. So that main card looks solid to me. I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And like I said, can't complain. The earlier afternoons, we're gonna leave the Apex, and it's still going to be daylight outside, man. I'm looking forward to that. Any of those that stand out to you as your favorite or somebody that Renato Moicano, by the way, another Renato Moicano's English is getting phenomenal. He actually apologized as he sat down and was like, hey, man, I'm going to do this all in English, so sorry if it's bad. And I'm like, I don't think he said one thing wrong the whole time.
It was awesome. Yeah. It was funny because I was looking right at that fight when you said that. I think that fight's going to be interesting to start off the main card. I think that's the kind of fight that's going to bring a lot of energy, good striking, good pace. And I think both those guys, I think – if we don't see a finish, that's going to be, I think that's an under the radar fight of the night candidate right there. The one right below that, Kennedy and Jack
and Jeku.
Jeku. I always butcher one. That one.
Kennedy.
Kennedy. I thought he, at his last fight, showed sort of broke out of his shell a little bit. So I'm excited to see how that is. And he's got a super tough fight. Marquez is legit. That's another one that could be a lot of good action. But that's also one that we could see that one get stopped for sure.
And dude, I'm telling you, Felipe Pineda is going to bang. Dalby and Means could bang. So I think we're in for a pretty
And there's Yulia versus Yulia. I'm hearing that that's what the PR was saying. They both go by Yulia. Like, Yulia Stolyarenko, who's super cute, but is not the hasn't had the greatest success. Let's put it that way.
Right.
When she was, what was it, the Contender Series or the Ultimate Fighter, when we saw her, yep. I was like, remember we saw her, I was like, oh, she seems really sweet. I was like, I hope she's great. And I was like, oh, well,
but
she didn't have the most success.
Avila is a tough matchup.
She is so badass. I was like, and this is another one, I'm like, God, they do not give Stolyarenko easy fights.
Well, I was gonna save the prelims, but since you ducked down there, but we'll get to prelims.
I thought you were just talking about the main card.
Well,
okay.
Don't you remember in our pre-production meeting when we laid out the notes very, very timely? you got to consult the notes from the production meeting, man. I'm gonna have to alert.
I just fly from the.
I'm gonna have to alert the rest of the staff that you weren't paying attention to the notes today, and maybe I could tell your head wasn't there in the production meeting. Maybe you went a little hard last night. Maybe you went a little hard last night.
There's no maybe.
Well, I need you in our production meeting, our lengthy pre-prep production meetings. I need you to pay attention so that we're hitting our marks here, okay? We didn't hit our mark here, and that's kind of bothering me right now. I'm gonna let it slide, though. In fact, you know what? I need a second to myself. So while I take the second to regroup from this clear production error and just Cold Coffee's unwillingness to follow the format that I've spent hours preparing and that the whole staff has really worked
and you color-coded
hard
it.
On. I mean,
what is it? Is that fuchsia?
We've got a run sheet right here. We've got a run sheet with specific times and marks, and you're just skipping over them. I'm a little upset right now. So let's do this. Let's kick it over to Anthony Pettis. I had a chance to talk to Anthony Pettis. Anthony's in a very unique situation here because he lost his debut, and it didn't work out well for him in his first PFL start.
It's not the best showing.
He's in danger of not making the playoffs, which is crazy for a high-profile addition that's chasing after it and one of the biggest names in the company. He's got an important fight on his hands on Friday, so I had a chance to speak to him, and here was our conversation.
All right, Showtime. So the PFL debut was in April. Obviously, it didn't go as you would have liked, I'm sure. Was that a shock to you, man? I know you wanted to come in there and make a great first impression and weren't able to do that. Was it a little surprising to you?
Nah, you know what, man? I feel like, it definitely was surprising, but I feel like where my mindset was at, like going back and looking back at where I was at mentally and like the preparation I did for the fight, I was going for a big knockout. You know, I was going for a Showtime finish. I was trying to be that guy that, the Showtime kick off the cage. And I forgot to build it up, man. So, like, I frustrated myself. Watching that fight just made me really frustrated with myself. I'm like, bro, I'm way better than what I did out there. And, this time around, I just, like, watched the fight, wrote down everything I thought about that I could change that's in my possibility, that's in my power to change. And that's all I did. I started attacking that list, man. I can't, like, beat myself up. I can't, like, get mad at myself. I've been here before. Now, it was 10 years ago when I lost my UFC debut, exactly this month. And then I went on my title run and got that belt, got a defense and did everything I did in the UFC over there. So I've been here before. I feel like I'm more mature, I'm smarter in my approach, and I realize being nice to myself and being kind to myself is going to get me further along than judging myself and being mean to myself.
That's interesting. You know, it's funny. I hadn't even thought about the comparison to your UFC debut, but it feels real similar, right? Like all the expectations on you, and then
I just
come up short.
Kick, and then I lost to Clay Guida. Yeah, and then it's like the story of my life. I'm just like meant to. It's like meant to be this way. God's plan, kind of. So that's why I'm like at the point where I'm at. It's like I've been here before. I've turned it around. Best thing I can do is change what's in my power, and I made that list and I attacked that list like crazy.
That's awesome. So I guess the good thing about the PFL format is here you are. I mean, you're back 2 months later, right? So is that like a good thing for you to get right back in the rhythm?
Last time I was here, I was ready to go, bro. Like I was here for 12 days in that quarantine, 11 days in the quarantine. And then the press conference, like I go downstairs. I'm like, damn, I feel like my stomach feels a little off or like I'm nervous. I'm like, there's no way I'm nervous for this. I've been doing this way too long. We do the square off and then I get back to my room. I start throwing up, bro. Like I got super sick. I'm like, man. And my daughter was coming that Monday, so I'm like calling my fiance, like, should I just ride it out and take this fight? She's like, nah, like don't fight her. Like, don't fight don't fight when you're like not 100%. So I called the fight. Luckily, we still had the opportunity to come on this one, and kind of worked out well because I think Montefio was going to fight his teammate, and you know, they switched that up. He fought my guy, so you know, kind of God's plan, man. You know, I feel like I'm definitely excited to be here. I have an opportunity to become, you know, a champion still. I got to go out there and finish this fight, and it doesn't really change what I thought about. It's just I'm going to take my time and slowly look for the finish, not force it.
It's interesting, right? Because I'm curious. Because the way the format is, you kind of need to go for the finish, but you can't rush it. It's such a kind of a difficult balance, right? Because that's the whole thing is don't rush anything. But the quicker you get this thing finished, the better chance you have of being in the playoffs, right? So is that a difficult balance as you step in there?
No, because it is a difficult balance because like when you're rushing, like for me, like when I want to be Showtime and I want to be flashy, it's a different energy source, right? And then if you look at the Clay Clollard fight, that energy source you can't last that way. Like you're throwing power shots, and especially with. And I won't make excuses. Like, it's just experiences. Like I said, I made a list. I wrote it down. I haven't fought on a vinyl canvas or a vinyl floor in such a long time that it was so slippery out there. Like, every time I threw a kick, I was falling on my back or, like, I couldn't get my footing on there. So I put that on there as adjustments. So I immediately focused on my boxing. I'm going to use a lot more hands this fight. I've been posting it. You know, everybody's seen what I've been attacking. He knows what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be putting my hands together. I'm looking to put these hands on them and not going to force the kicks. I'm not going to force anything flashy. You're going to see a well-fought, smart fight by me.
It's interesting because I had seen how much boxing was on your feed, almost like entirely boxing on your social media. So I was curious. I mean, is that boxing for MMA or are you getting that little bug where you want to do the boxing crossover at some point?
Well, this boxing I'm doing now is for MMA, but I definitely will do some boxing in my career, man. I love to box, and you know, I just doing the training, man. Listening to that music, seeing the guys I'm sparring with, man. Like it's just a fun environment. You know, it's just like it's you just want to be there. So I definitely will, you know, pursue that. And seeing Anderson Silva do it, bro, that's my idol, man. Seeing a guy like that go out there, like I have so much respect for that dude to see what he did against Chavez Jr. You know, he could have fought. You know, Logan Paul, you know, and nobody wanted to bet it than I, but he chose to fight a guy who had real experience, real championships, and tested himself. That's the boxing I want to do. I don't want to go over there and have like a speculation. I don't want to fight at a concert. I want to fight at a boxing show.
That was pretty inspiring performance, man. That was pretty unique.
Definitely. But yeah, man, the boxing I'm doing right now is for MMA. It's for it's Cuban style, Mexican style mix. It's range control, distance control, stuff I did very early in my career when I was just learning to put boxing together because I was more of a Taekwondo guy with like decent power shots. I would throw haymakers. But when I decided to, you know, pursue MMA as a career, I studied the Cuban and Mexican style with Duke. And I found one of the best, you know, Cuban and Mexican coaches in Vegas. He agreed to let me be part of his team. So it's huge for me, man, to be out there and doing that and having fun doing it.
That's awesome. By the way, your jiu-jitsu is pretty good too, man. Do people ever talk to you about like, bro, go to the grappling more than you do?
Man, you know what? I do have really good jiu-jitsu, but like my submissions comes when I hurt guys. Like most of my wins are by submission. It's because I frustrated them on the feet and I made them give me the submission. They wanted out of it. They wanted to get the heck out of there. They didn't like it. You know, Chiesa's fight, you know, I stung him with that right hand off the kick, and then he tried to take me down. Then I got a submission. A lot of my submissions like that. I have a really good strong ground game, but I like knocking people out, man. That's my thing.
It's funny. I've asked you this before, but I think you're a little older, more mature now, but I've asked you about the Showtime kick, if it was almost a curse in some ways because you're forced to be that guy. Do you ever think about it? I mean, like if you could change it, would you take it back so that people didn't always put that on your shoulders?
No, man, that's just like, I mean, I've been doing this so long. For like saying that my UFC debut was 10 years ago, whoa, I'm like, even just saying that right now, I didn't even put that together. But I've been doing this so long, man. Like now that I'm more mature and I know where I'm at, like I'm okay being polite and kind to myself, man. Like I can't get frustrated with things I did in the past because that's the past. Like that's things that I was supposed to do that at that time. Right now, this is a totally different time. I got to put myself in a brain state where I can create and not be a prisoner to anything. Like no Showtime name, no whatever the media thinks, whatever my coaches think. It's literally, I got to be in a creative mind space.
That's awesome. Hey, talk about life outside of the cage, right? Dad now, how amazing is that? Brother as a champion. I got to think that's a little bit inspiring as well to see him reach those heights as well. I mean, is could life be in a better place right now?
Man, I'm blessed, bro. I'm definitely so blessed, bro. Like being part of this tournament, being in the position I'm at. My daughter was born very healthy. You know, beautiful little girl. I couldn't ask for a better experience with that. My little brother's out here right now with me, training with me, you know, watching him do what he did, which that's what kind of inspired my transition to back to the basics. I saw how he fought his last fight. I'm like, dang, that's where I was at. And I got to get back to that clean striking. So, you know, having him back here, he's inspiring me. It's just everything's coming around full circle. I'm starting my fight show comes up in October. I got a boxing event coming in December. Everything's just everything's flowing, man.
That's awesome. Let me say, as a fellow father, it's a blessing to be a father, but don't lie. Did it feel good to be in that bubble and be able to sleep in a little bit?
Yeah, bro. The first bubble I was in, like, I was like, man, because my daughter was due, like, we knew she was due the 14th. Like, we had that planned out so I could make my fight and then make the birth. The first bubble, I'm like, the whole time, I'm like, man, if she comes while I'm in here, imagine that story, like, explaining to her when she's, like, 10 years old. Hey, I was in quarantine in a tournament for this thing called COVID. Probably missed your birth. Like, it'd have been crazy. And I kept thinking that. But, you know, everything worked out the way it was supposed to, man. You know, I got home. You know, I didn't get to fight, but, you know, I got home, saw my daughter's birth. I got to regroup. I got my head back right. And, you know, I got to see, like I said, I got to see her birth. And that's the most important thing for me.
That's a beautiful thing, man. All right, we'll talk about this matchup, Hoshman Fio. What do you know about him? What do you think about him? How do you think your styles match up?
I know his last fight, honestly, man. Like, I watched his last fight. I studied his last fight. I didn't go too far back in his career because, you know, like I said, where you're at right now is the guy that's going to show up or similar to that guy. He has great right hand, you know, counter right hand, good left check hook. He doesn't have too much off his back. You know, like, when he's on his back, he doesn't look for submissions. He's not, like, trying to go for crazy stuff. But, you know, my game plan is to knock him out. You know, I'm going to go out there in the orthodox stance. You know, I've been showing it on my feeds. Like, there's nothing, like, I'm going to change. I've been showing everything I'm doing. I'm going to put him in the orthodox stance. I'm going to find my rhythm. I'm going to build up a range. And once I find that range, it's showtime.
It's amazing. Is that just is it confidence that allows, I mean, like you just said, you're not hiding anything. You're showing everything. Like, this is what I'm going to do. This is the game plan. Like, is that confidence? Because I feel like there's always people try to keep the element of surprise and have some little trickery. And you're just saying, nah, man, check out the video. Here's what I'm doing. Here's what's going to happen.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's just preparation, I would say. Like, the confidence comes from the preparation. Like, man, the first sparring session I had at that boxing gym wasn't pretty. You know, I was tested, bro. I was like, whoa, it felt like a fight. And all the boxers wanted me to lose. And they're my teammates, you know, his team. But, you know, they definitely wanted MMA not to win that boxing match. So I was in a hostile environment for the whole first 2-3 weeks until I could hold my own in there again. And it felt like, I was like, yo, this is how I used to feel. Like, I had to prove myself. And then once I started feeling what my coach was teaching me, I'm like, oh, shit, this shit really works. You know, and like, I used it before, like the range, the 1-2-1s, the ones, like the cadence of building up the knockout. And then when the knockout comes, putting yourself in the right position for the knockout and not just leaving it up to chance, you know, throwing a haymaker. And I feel like for some reason, like the last couple of fights, I've been leaving it up to chance. I've been going 50-50 with these guys, whoever lands first. Whoever gets cut, you know, more loses. Like, I don't need to fight that way. You know, I'm too smart to fight that way, too talented to fight that way. And I needed, I guess it's an outside voice. Cause I was even telling Duke, I'm like, Duke, you've been telling me this every fight. But then when I heard him say it, it just resonated something a little different, man. And like, and I had to use it in the boxing gym and I had to see it work immediately. And I'm like, okay, I got to trust the process. So I feel like, you know, it's fighting. You know, I'm going to go out there. I got two hands, two legs. Two elbows, two knees, just like this guy. And, you know, I'm going to go out there and show him I'm better.
That's amazing, man. Well, it sounds like you're in a great mental space. So I guess what I would ask is, I mean, there's a chance you don't make the playoffs, right? I mean, even if you win, there's a chance you don't make the playoffs. Would that be some kind of huge disappointment or huge letdown? Or you just feel like, hey, it's out of my control. I do what I got to do.
Man, there's a chance I don't make the fight. You know, like, I didn't make the fight. I was here last time and I didn't make the fight. So it's like, if you think about what could happen, you take yourself out of that creative mindset of what you want to happen and what you plan to happen. So, yeah, man, I stopped thinking about what could happen a long time ago, man. Anybody's judgment upon me is come do what I do and see if you can live in my life. You know, like the fans that say, oh, retire, like, and I hate that. When fighters lose, fans are like, retire, they lost it. Come do what we do and see how hard this life is, man. And I love this life. I'm blessed to be where I'm at. You just said everything that's going on in my life. Like, it's, I'm blessed to be in this position. I have no complaints.
That's awesome, man. Well, it's great to hear, man. It sounds like you're in an awesome place, man, after covering your career for so long, from the WC to the USC today. It sounds like right now you might be happier than ever. So I'll just leave you with this, man. What do you think we see? I mean, this is a big one for you. It sounds like you're focused. Everything goes to plan. What do we see?
You're going to see a knockout. Hands. hands knock. I'm calling it out. I'm building up. I'm gonna build this thing up. Either right hand, left hook, or he's gonna get stunned and shoot on me, and I'll get my submission. But I need the finish, so I'm getting my playoff spot.
All right, so that's Showtime. Anthony Pettis, look, he's in a weird spot, man. I mean, I love what he's saying. I'm not going to rush anything. I'm not going to force anything. But at the same time, you kind of got to rush something. You kind of got to force something because you need the points. You know what I mean? So I'm so interested in that position that he's in. But I've been covering the guy's career for so long. Boy, I tell you what, when he said, you know, it's 10 years since I made my UFC debut, I was like, oh, my God, time is going by so fast. But, you know, having covered his career, I don't know that I've ever heard him in a better place than he's in right now. So, obviously, I think some of that has to do with, you know, new baby, his brother's doing well. I mean, it just sounds like so many great things are happening for him. So, pumped for Anthony Pettis and the situation that he's in. So, we'll see how it plays out.
Precarious position.
It's going to be a big one. All right, back to UFC Fight Night 190. Did want to touch on some of the prelims just to look out for. Warley Owls against Jeremiah Wells. Jeremiah Wells, I've got some CFFC love, of course, for him, making his debut in the UFC finally after a lot of time. But Warley Owls is, you know, a dangerous character who's had some setbacks, who believes that now is his time, and I think that's a fun matchup. Yancy Medeiros is on the card against Amir Hadjovic. That's going to be a fantastic fight. Anytime Yancy fights, you know you're in for a scrap. Justin James, man, my boy Justin James from right here in Vegas at Extreme Couture, coached my kid in wrestling for a long time, facing Charles Rosa. Saw they took a picture together at the PI the other day. I thought that was so cool, man, you know, to have opponents and just be like, hey, man, we're cool. Like, we're going to go punch each other in the face, but let's
– Yeah, that is cool.
We don't have anything. You touched on there, Julia Avila versus Julija Stoliarenko.
Julia versus Julia.
Marcin Pratnio versus Ike Villanueva. I know you like the Ike Villanueva wild card coming in there. The one that's going to look – I cannot wait to see just this stare down. Michelle Prezeris versus Shavkat Rachmanov. Wait till they stand next to each other. It's going to be the craziest visual you've ever seen. Shavkat is huge, and Michelle is just a fire hydrant of a human being. I mean, yeah. Just short, stocky.
Short and stocky.
And Shavkat, meanwhile, is going to tower over him. That's going to be a funny visual, but the class of that prelim, Haoni Barcelos versus Timur Valiyev. I mean, dude, that is a fight. Maybe a fight that's flying under people's radar or names that you know. These dudes are killers.
I know, just speaking on that last one, I know that it doesn't go in our staff picks, but I am interested, you know, since we've always been putting those picks out, that Prezeris and the Rachmanov, who did you take in that one?
Oh, I took Shavkat.
So did I.
Yeah.
His last fight,
I think he's the real deal.
That dude is, he's so bad, man.
I think he's the real deal.
He is so bad.
And I think Haoni Barcelos is the real deal as well. And I like Timur Valiyev a lot. I mean, I started following Timur in his World Series days, and I was like, man, I really like this guy. But I think Haoni Barcelos is like, he's like prime Aldo, man. He said, I'm telling you, there's going to be some scraps on this one. Tune in.
Yeah.
And again, it's ESPN Plus, so it's kind of it's on demand.
These are cards where we say like the future prospects, the guys that are guys and gals that are working their ways up and know that can carry a show. So there's almost like in a fight like this, when you don't have a big crazy title on the line, how are you going to bring entertainment in a fight card that keeps people into it? So that's, you know, really puts the challenge on the matchmakers to put a nice eclectic mix together.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look down the card, yeah, I mean, when there's these pockets of just studs fighting each other.
Yep.
I mean, that I think you're right. I think this card could be really, really good. And it's so early in the day. Like, you get to start your day, you watch awesome fights, and then you feel like you could still do
something. Still got a Saturday night. You can go do what you got to do. You ain't got to give up your Saturday night. So I love
cool.
it. Tune into that. Just a couple other real quick notes. Nolan King put a great story together on Max Roshkoff. Obviously, if you listen to this story listen to this podcast for any length of time, you know that I've got an affinity for Max Roshkoff. He taught my kid in jiu-jitsu for a little while. And then, of course, had the the difficult UFC debut,
yeah.
And has been kind of very quiet since. But he's getting back to fighting. He's going to fight on the Cage Warriors card that's out in California. in August, and happy to see him back. I actually shot him a few text messages today and caught back up with him. I know he went through some dark times, man.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I thought he was done. Yep. I thought he just decided it wasn't for him.
He went through some dark times, and he's back, and I'm happy to see that because I'm telling you, he's a good kid. I know he took a lot of heat for what happened there, but I'm telling you, I've spent a lot of time in the gym with the kid, and he's skilled, he's a good dude.
And unfortunately, people for some reason feel like it's their decision to talk shit about somebody when somebody's having some issues or whatever. The kid is kid. Well, I guess I just had my birthday. Everybody,
I mean, you're 35, so I mean, yeah. These guys are.
He is super skilled. He is super talented, and I think that's what threw all of us off watching the fight. We're like, wow. You know, if I had that much skill, would I sit on the stool? Would I get up or would I stay on the stool? And it's one of those questions that I think, if anything, I'd be more surprised why we don't see that more often in this particular sport.
Right.
You know, the sport that, you know, people are going in there, putting their body in harm's way. The mental side of the game is always one of the ones that's, for some fighters and for maybe even most, that's the part that they get a hold of last. You know, the part that they finally get in check, because you always hear as they go on there, like, I finally got my mind right. I started treating myself
so
right.
Hard,
I was believing.
Man.
And even recently in a lot of the interviews, what did we hear from Matt? Was it Matt Brown? What did we hear from Alexei Oleinik? He'd been in a million fights, and he's like, and it's kind of weird. You know, now as I'm getting, and I'm doing it, I'm getting nervous again. You know, yep. And it's like, bro, you've done this
25 years.
1 million times. How can you be getting nervous? So I mean, that's one of the interesting things about this. We always look at the actual fight skills, the submission skills, the striking skills, but we never really a lot of times talk about the actual mental side of what's behind
such a huge
what
part
it takes
of this game.
To get in. It's if anything, probably maybe the biggest part.
I completely agree,
because it's even tied into how well you deliver your skills, because you have to have the mental, you know, fortitude and the acuity to know what you're doing.
I think that's honestly what makes me such a fan of the sport and a fan of the athletes involved in it, is not so much just the physical prowess of what they do, but the mental approach that they have to take. And sometimes I get people that, you know, they kind of joke or whatever, like, you know, I remember even John Kavanaugh was joking one time about how, like, we always ask, how does something feel, or what do you think, you know, and they're like, he used to joke about that, like, you know, the questions we ask, how do you feel about this, how do you feel about that. But it's what's most amazing to me is the mental side of this game, man. What it takes to succeed. It's so much more than the physical. I don't know if people always realize that, and I think that's why I enjoy focusing on it so much. Like, what these men and women do is such a mental mindfuck, to be honest with you, man.
It's a complete
mindfuck. You know what I mean?
So for him coming back.
I love it.
And that's the kind
of
thing that we should highlight more, because I think that's the kind of thing that if more fighters know that it's fine and it's okay to talk about that, and this is even actually just talking about mental issues on the outside, if we find as a society it's okay to talk about these things more, it's good, it's better for the benefit of everybody. So here's a guy that most people would think, like, wow, this kid's not afraid of anything.
Yeah.
You know, he had moments of doubts, and it'll be interesting to see where his head was at, what he learned from it, and share that sort of stuff. So to see him overcome yet another battle with probably, like what we said, the biggest, hardest part, the mental aspect. It's amazing. And good for him.
It's so amazing because, I've heard the same story over and over. I think it's basically to a man, to a woman. Anybody on the UFC roster, if something popped off in a bar, would clear out the room. You know what I mean? They're trained killers.
Yeah.
They would literally clear out the room. But when you have to sign your name to a contract and you've got a person's name and a date and a time and a location, and that's all you got to think about every single day for 6 weeks, it messes with you, man.
Yeah.
It messes with you. And
I believe it.
It's amazing. So, yeah, check out that story. Nolan King did that, and I'm happy to see Max Rochkoff back. And, by the way, I'm going to go ahead and break some news. The phone call came while we were hearing from Anthony Pettis, but I will be going out next week. This isn't breaking news. I'm going out next week for Cage Fury Fighting Championships 98. We'll be doing that show on UFC Fight Pass on Saturday night. But we will actually be launching a grappling event as well. And this was something that had been in the works for a long time. They wanted to launch Fury Professional Grappling as well, and have a grappling league as well to feature, you know, a lot of the East Coast studs out there that, you know, haven't had an opportunity to feature in an organization like this. Finally got it done. And we just got the word that UFC Fight Pass is going to pick that up as well. So we'll be doing Fury Grappling 1 on Friday night on UFC Fight Pass, and then CFFC 98 on Saturday night on UFC Fight Pass. So I'm excited for that because it's going to be me and CM Punk doing it again, as we always do. But we're going to be calling Grappling one night and MMA the next. So I'm pretty excited about that. So that'll be a busy week. And I know you, of course, have vacation next week, but you're leaving on Friday morning as well. So we will get together on Thursday and do the show like we do every week for 326 consecutive weeks.
Might have to do it remotely next time because this drive is you know.
I understand it's difficult to leave.
The palatial grounds.
I can understand. I mean, if I was a resident of the palatial grounds, I could understand, you know, looking at that place in the rearview mirror might be difficult.
It's tough. It's tough.
It's a journey just to get off the ground, much less to start making the drive down here to where us common folk live at, where we reside. You know what I mean? So I totally understand.
That's
funny. Listen, everybody that supports us at patreon.com/MMAWarriors, so we appreciate it. Of course, I will have the and a half episode this weekend for you as well, so we'll do that. And of course, we appreciate everybody just kind of chatting and talking and hanging out over there. Everybody that appreciates the show, it really means the world to us. But honestly, for each and every one of you, it means everything for us just for you to tune in each week. So thanks for listening.